Good morning, everyone, and welcome. I'm informed the electronics are behaving again, so we can begin. Judge Mlambo, Judge Malafesi, we tend to forget your surname, so it will just be and everyone else in the Legal Aid delegation. A warm word of welcome to all of you. We've been looking forward to your presentation ever since we began this process in the BRRR. But of course, since the other day's court judgment, it's taken added significance. And so I've no doubt that everyone on the committee will be curious to hear how you intend to deal with that particular development, Judge Mlambo. But let me not delay matters any further and hand over to you and ask you to say a few words. Good morning, Chair. Thank you very much for your kind words at having to see us today. As I always say when I come here with my team, that we look forward to engaging with the committee because we find a lot of guidance in the exchanges. It guides us on the work we do, and it keeps us on track. And it is with that spirit that we again appear before this committee today. Chair, I think I should just, as is customary, just introduce the people who are around me. At the top of the table is Judge Malafesi. He's the Deputy Chairperson of Legal Aid South Africa. And then next to her is Ms. Vidhu Vedalankar, the Chief Executive Officer. And then next to me is Mr. Jan Marie. He's a board member of Legal Aid South Africa. Then I have a number of executives who are sitting in the back benches, if one can refer to them as that. The Head of Communications, Mr. Mpok Pasha. Mr. Vela Mdaka, the Regional Operations Executive of KwaZulu-Natal. And then next to him is Ms. Ronel Arendt. She's our Justice Center Executive for the Belleville office. And then we've got Mr. Gomez Esther-Aden, the Justice Center Executive for the Cape Town Justice Center. And just to show we train our lawyers very well, manning the electronics for us is Mr. Elroy McCallum. He's the Justice Center Executive for Malmesbury. He's a lawyer, so don't be mistaken. Chair, you mentioned the later than tomorrow, I think, as to the way forward. Some of us have read it. We've seen the drift in the thinking of the court. But I'm not sure if it will be acceptable if I were to say, let's hold our horses in terms of expressing what our response is going to be to the judgment. And we've convinced the whole board and we've come up with a collective view about what we're going to do. Thank you, Chair.
Immediately next question. To me?
Do I not remember correctly that the Department of Justice indicated to us just a few days ago that $33 million will be offered in the adjustment appropriation, of which $3 million for the Human Rights Commission's work at Matapana, and the balance, I thought, am I completely wrong, that the balance was precisely for this kind of matter? How divided, I don't know. Perhaps you will recall better than I, but perhaps other members will. No, it is not correct. Thank you.
So was that not the funding for the commission themselves that seemed to be running, and not so much funding for possible funding for the legal aid board? You know, the department funds the commission and then gets the money back from the presidency at a later stage. So that may well have been what that extra funding was for, because the commissions are going extended, both the arms deal and the Marikana commission. So I think there's additional funding necessary just to fund the commission themselves.
Thank you, Chair. We are heartened when we see such a response, because our objective has always been that we should not imperil those who justifiably require our assistance, and that's our approach throughout. Chair, with your permission, could I just go to today's presentation?
Yes.
Thank you. The document was circulated in time. I would hope it was received in time by the committee. Mine is just to introduce the content of the document that was circulated. And in my introduction, I think I need to emphasize that this is our first year of implementation of our 5-year strategic plan. And what you would see, or what the committee would see in the document, is that our performance, as well as our targets to achieve, our achievements are on track. We are of the view that we have achieved our mandate in this first year of providing legal aid to indigenous South Africans. We have a total number of just over 700,000 legal matters that we dealt with, including legal advice and impact matters. And as we've demonstrated over the years, we've maintained our sound financial management practices. We have once more obtained a clean audit from the Auditor General. And the presentation in broad outlines a number of areas which the committee will be taken through by various members of the team. So before I step off the podium, so to speak, Chair, we want to believe we remain on track in all areas in terms of what we do. But as I said earlier,
we would welcome engagement with the community in terms of areas that we may not have focused on that the community would like us to look at. But with those few words in broad, I would like to hand over to my team to take the committee further for implementing. Thank you, gentlemen.
I want to hold my horses, but just, I would just recommend that depending on what decision the legal aid board takes, obviously it will have financial implications that they might want to furnish us with an additional input as to the financial implications of yesterday's decision, but that we're not going to discuss now. But obviously we are discussing their budget today, so I would think, Chair, that depending on what decision the board takes, there might well be a requirement for additional funding. Depends whether an appeal is lodged or not. But may I suggest that we offer the board the opportunity to give us a further written submission once they have taken their decision. That's probably the wisest thing. We don't have to engage today on that issue because they haven't taken the decision.
It depends on your decision.
It does, but I think I can give the committee some numbers that we're looking at. If that also is a factor, the judgment. As I indicated to you, Chair, when we discussed this matter outside, we are already involved in Marikana. We're representing the families of the deceased miners and policemen whose families require the representation. So the sum total of our exposure in Marikana, taking account of what the implications of the judgment, takes us to somewhere around 17 million rands. But I think I will ask the CEO to, because I've got the figures here, to take the committee through that, if it's wanted now. I think we've got a slide and the CEO can take the committee through as to what the figures are. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just talk to the figures for a moment before the presentation. In the Marikana matter, we have assisted with the family. We have assisted the families of deceased miners, and that has already cost us about 2 million to date. We believe that the commission is going to be extended up to the end of March, and that is based on that. I think that might be the money that they were talking about. That's the money that was required for that. For us to fund the families of the deceased miners, as well as to fund the injured and arrested miners, as we were ordered by the court, and there were two other groups, which is the deceased security guards, as well as deceased and injured staff members. They all requested legal aid from us, so that's four groups. So for them, all of them combined, it's about 17 million that we'll need only up to the end of the financial year, which means if the commission is extended further, we will need further. That 17 million, we don't have that money, which means that we will have to take it either from our BDK budget or we'll have to cut back on some other stuff, unless government gives us some of that money. Okay, but in going back to the presentation, I'll talk to that first section. We've been joined by other members of our executive team. The flight is a bit delayed, so they'll also help me once they settle down. But to start, we focus on legal services delivery. In this past financial year, 2012-13, ending in March of 2013, we are pleased to announce that we were on track and we were able to deliver services. It is also a year in which we had budget cuts of about 64 million, which links to 30 million efficiency cuts, 34 million rather, efficiency cuts from National Treasury, as well as 30 million which links to OED funding that didn't come through, and therefore we had to then add to our baseline. So in total, 64 million. So it was a tough year for us in financial terms, but we were able to still keep our services on track, And although we didn't really increase much, we did manage to provide the services we needed. But if we have any further cuts, it's unlikely that we will be able to continue without cutting that. In this year, that is under review, our national system was on track and it hasn't changed. And in total, we had 2,694 staff. The next slide just shows what you've seen in the past, our national footprint across the country. And then the slide after that shows drops to the number of staff that we have. And as at the end of March, we were recruited up to 96%, which is good because we were then able to ensure that we have sufficient staff to deliver the services we need to. 79% of our staff are legal staff, and that includes paralegals. Moving further in terms of coverage of courts, which I think is important because it talks to our capacity, that in the district courts, the coverage in the past financial year was at 88.7% of district courts. And in regional courts, it's at 99%. And in high courts, we deal with or we assist in all matters that require legal aid, and in civil matters, we assist in matters that require, that is based on our capacity. Moving to the next slide, in terms of criminal and civil matters, we were pleased that in the past financial year, the percentage of civil matters that we assisted was increased to 13%, and the percentage of criminal matters was 87%. So in total, just legal matters, which is where our lawyers assisted, it was 438,862 matters in which we gave assistance in that financial year. The next slide just talks to the split in terms of criminal civil, which is the 87-13, as well as it talks to the service delivery systems that we use. And the bulk of our work is still done through our justice centers, as you can see. 96% of our work is done through our justice centers. And we also have judicare practitioners, which is outsourced to private lawyers, that's the judicare system, assisting us in 3% of our matters. And then we also have agency agreements and cooperation partners. In the next slide, again, we've talked to this criminal civil split, but as you can see over the years, and this shows you a historical picture, that the number of civil matters we are doing has increased. And from the previous financial year, the number of matters increased by about 19%, the civil matters, I'm talking about. Whereas the criminal matters, as you can see, they are almost the same. In terms of the types of courts in the next slide that we are covering, as is the case in terms of the bulk of the matters being heard in the lower court, so that our assistance is also in the lower court, with 72% of our work and the matters we do being in district courts, 14% of it in regional courts, and 1% in the high courts. In civil courts, it's about 13%. So almost three-quarters of our new matters taken up are in the district court. This is equivalent to 83%, however, of criminal matters, if you take only criminals, excluding civil. The drop in the high court numbers can be as a result of increased jurisdiction in regional courts, but it's also, I think, that the screening of matters is coming into play, and that helps also. In the finalized matters, you can see that we are also keeping track of matters finalized as we take them on so that we ensure that we don't build up matters. And in district courts, we finalized 102% of the matters in relation to new matters taken on, which means that it would have included some matters that were from the previous financial year. In regional courts, it was at 99%, and in high courts, at 83%. In civil matters, it's at 77%. Moving to the next slide, which talks to the nature or the type of matters done in criminal courts, you can see that the bulk of our work is in aggressive crimes and in economic crimes. And that in the slide that follows, we talk to the type of civil matters we do, where the bulk of it is matters dealing with family matters. We do 13% land matters, but also importantly, 19% of the matters done in civil. In the civil section, we are dealing with children, and that is because of the children we assist especially in estate matters which links to the master. The next slide talks to pending matters and where we keep track of pending and those that go beyond the target we set ourselves, for example in district court that we shouldn't have any matters that are longer than 6 months. In district court and in the civil matters, we are within those targets, the backlog targets that we set. Whereas in regional court and in high court, you can see we're exceeding it in regional court a bit, from 25% to 28%, but in high court quite a lot, in terms of 52% instead of less than 30%. The next slide talks to the matters involving children. Again, we can show in the slide that we are pleased that we are able to assist, and we assisted in that past financial year 26,000 children. Of these, 76% were children in conflict with the law, and 24% in civil matters. And as I explained, in terms of civil matters, the increase is linked into that project we have with the Master's Office. But that in criminal matters the decrease is also welcomed, because it means that the Child Justice Act is working and that we are able to divert children out of the system, and therefore we are able to assist in that way in keeping them out of the court. In general advice matters, that was, you can see the increase, we increased it marginally from the previous financial year, 17% is reasonable, and that advice is given to our Justice Centre paralegals, which includes satellite offices. So at every office we have paralegals who assist walking clients with advice matters. Our legal aid advice line that we talked about in the past is also providing assistance, in this case provided assistance to 44,000 people through the through our toll-free number. And We have that 26,000 linked into ATP paralegals, which is just the previous slide, which is that is where the one after, yeah, the advice given linked into paralegals who work with the waiting trial detainees, and that's where they go to prisons and work with them to see who has and who doesn't have legal aid and able to assist them and link them where they might have been missing. The next slide talks to the type of matters we're getting at our call center, and the bulk of the matters is civil, which is 88%, and it's interesting to note that 12% of the callers are looking for assistance in criminal matters. And then the range of the types of matters we're doing is also shown in that slide. Automatic reviews is something we've been tracking over the years, just to show that we are ensuring that they are reduced. And in the past year, we reduced it by 19% from the previous financial year, which meant in that year there were 5,666 automatic reviews. As we know, because we're dealing with the delivery of legal services, the issue of quality is also critical, and in this slide we show that we are keeping also track of, and we are assessing the quality of our legal practitioners. Each category is indicated there, and in that we can say that in all categories, at a general level, we have achieved our targets and exceeded them, and that what we also keep track of is individual practitioners that may not meet targets. And so that column on the extreme right indicates that 95% of the practitioners in total, including paralegals, meet their targets, which means 5% don't meet our own targets, and those are ones that get additional supervision and support, and then we have to work with them so that they are able to then meet the targets over the next financial year. The next slide talks to, in legal matters, the outcomes that we have recorded from our side in criminal matters. And what we are pleased to announce is that in the SCA matter that we have been involved in the financial year, we have a success rate of 64%. And that is a good record, because it is actually, and we've tracked it is higher than that of private practitioners that appear in the SCA in criminal matters. We're not talking about criminal, we do primarily criminal matters in the SCA appeals. And in impact matters, this is a method in which we assist in larger matters which have either impact on a larger community or have some precedent setting part to it. We have a 90% success rate. In the other criminal matters, you can see the slide which shows that of the matters that are actually gone to the road, very few go on trial, and of those that go on trial, 18% of the matters that went on trial, we had acquittal, which means there were convictions in the other 82%. 15, excuse me, only 13% rather, 13% of criminal matters are finalized by means of guilty plea. We've included this because of the fact that we have had queried the board the extent to which our lawyers are involved in getting their clients to plead guilty, and this is an indication that that is not as high as people think. So that's legal aid delivery. The next section we talk to is our performance in terms of our support platform, and now that our other executives are here, I can hand over to our Chief Operations Officer, our COO, Jerry McCorney, and Jerry can then just talk to that section. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. I don't know very much, just to take the presentation to the next slide, giving the outline of our performance for the last financial year with regard to support platform. Firstly, in as far as our self-establishment is concerned, we had budgeted post of about 2,694 employees. And out of that, our recruitment level at the end of the financial year resulted to be at 95.6%, of which about 79%, which is 2,029 employees, constitute legal staff, which include paralegals. In that very line, our recruitment target has resulted at more than 96%. Of which we have experienced some challenges. Two of the challenges that we are reporting on here is that we were unable to meet the target that we have set for recruiting several PAs, which the committee would realize that that has been our focus in terms of growing our legal platform and in line with our strategy 2012-17. Second to that, we had a challenge in as far as retaining IT staff in this past financial year. However, in the overall, our staff turnover rate was recorded at 5.6% if we exclude candidate attendees. And including the candidate attorneys, it then takes us to 18.22%. May I say at that very point to say that our candidate attorneys are only with us for a short period, variably 1 year if they have served to the PLT, or they would be with us for 2 years and then after admission, if we do not have posts available, then they will be leaving the organization. On our employment equity levels, our overall EE levels remain lower than the target, especially when we have a focus on African women and people with disability. In the next slide, we will show our attempt in terms of trying to address that. If we were to make a further analysis of our recruitment rate, the committee would realize that while in the overall we are at 96%, however, Eastern Cape had the highest recruitment rate of 98%, and Limpopo Mpumalanga had the lowest turnover rate at 3.8%. So variably in terms of regions as presented, you would see that the regions have not been performing at the same rate. The next slide. In outlining the employment equity, what one would like to indicate would be, in the past period when we came to make a presentation to the portfolio committee, concern was also raised around the people with disability. I need to mention that when we look at the overall total of staff, in as far as that area is concerned, we have now been able in the past financial year to at least perform at a 0.4% higher than we had in the past financial year. So with an annual target of 2%, as at the end of the financial year, we are now at 1.6%, which is a reflection of concerted effort to make sure that we have the component, within the component of our staff, that representation for people with disability. The next slide. Our focus on leadership and staff development and training, together with a focus on employee wellness, is presented as outlined to the committee. Firstly, to say that in this last period, we have launched an employment value proposition, which is a sort of a marketing tool for the organization to showcase what Legal Aid South Africa would provide for any potential employees if they would have an interest to join us, stating the issue that would be important for us to meet the interest of potential employees, like our value proposition in as far as our values as an organization, the issues about passion for justice, integrity, among others. And secondly, our focus is in developing our employees, giving them opportunities in terms of engagement, and in the overall, the employment value proposition would then try to meet what potential employees would look for in the broader scale of employment market if they were to look for any law firm. Of course, in return, we would expect any employee to have responsibility and commitment, while we will be considerably rewarding them a competitive, what you call, salary. Secondly, we have also introduced a mentoring and coaching program, and this is in particular is to make sure that our quality of service meet our strategic imperatives and also support sustainability in terms of the organization going forward. This support also our succession planning program, which is also focusing in making sure that all our managers have the necessary insight and knowledge in as far as leadership management is supposed to be. And in this regard, we are indicating to say even in this past period, we have added another 30 of our managers to be on the leadership development program, which in this case is contracted to University of Witwatersrand. We have also since looked and responded to a need of also bringing on board the middle managers into a program called Management Advancement Program, which also supports our sustainability in terms of succession planning as an organization. In the overall, our talent management and workforce plan is geared towards attracting and retaining skilled and capable employees, and that includes from both our legal staff and our support staff. And supportive to that, our training and development targets, as we have already indicated, focus on leadership development, on legal capacity, and also respond to our business requirements, where in the overall exceeded in the last period. Continue along the same continuum, we would have to say that we try as an organization to make the work environment of Legal Aid SA to be a humanistic environment. And as such, the principles that we uphold to and endorse as an organization is that which promotes employee engagement and also promote empowering leaders, as we have already indicated. We're trying to focus also on stimulating innovation amongst employees by encouraging them to submit and a proposal that which would assist us in terms of introducing new practices and models which will be relevant to our institution. May I say that in this last period also, we have started to roll out a focus which responds to the current trauma, and in this regard, targeted to our legal practitioners in particular. Our experience has been that since when we're dealing with criminal matters, our legal practitioners, one way or the other, they may be psychologically affected when they are at the same time expected to deliver their responsibility in court or engaging clients. And as a result, we have this supporting program which makes sure that at least it gives them an understanding of what the vicarious trauma symptoms will be at an early age and what will be their possible impact on their psychosocial functioning. That will mean on their self, on their work, and significant relationship with their families and friends. This last period, our HIV/AIDS voluntary counseling and testing program has shown a slight decrease in terms of a comparison of last year from 30% to 28%. Our employee relations, that which relate to how we would receive and monitor grievances that we would receive from staff, we have the view that in this past period, as we report, we are targeted 51%, but we have been at 18%, whereas on the other side, we have a 3.7% higher matter that we have received from disciplinary matters. Having covered that, let me say that also as an organization, we are looking at our information and technology system. And we have an in-house developed system called an Infinitum system. It focuses on our core business operations. This system was introduced into our business operations in 2004. It has been performing very good. We have been able to grow the business relying on it. And now recently we have seen started to experience challenges because of the capacity of the system, because of the demand that of matters and transactions that we put through the system. And we have now since experienced intermittent instability, poor response, and we have been required to have consistent monitoring of the system. As a result, the board earlier in this calendar year take a resolution to replace the current system. We are currently on the process of developing a new system. And we are envisaging a 12-month period in covering to come up with a new system which would respond to the service that we are providing. Can I assure the committee that notwithstanding that, our current system is still functional and we are able to perform to the expected level that we have set ourselves. The next slide talks to our branding in terms of how we perform and how we have been viewed from external parties. Firstly, to say that our attempt to make sure that Legal Aid SA remains on the public image in as far as what we are required to do, responding to our mandate, we continue to look into alternative measures of making sure that our clients understand and know where we are. And for that very reason, in branding ourselves, we have been using billboards, radio adverts, and targeting on the African language stations in particular. We have also been expanding ourselves on TV adverts, coverage that which is on SABC and ETV. We are also monitoring our media interaction, and in this regard, the statistics that have been presented by us there is as far as our attempt to respond, informing media about what we are doing, issues that we are faced with, 137 press releases in the past period. We have engaged on 239 media interviews, and that variably involved high-profile cases and other cases of interest to the public. And also 199 media networking sessions in making sure that we continue to have a consistent relationship with media to understand what we are doing, at the same time that they can feed back to the public. We have done a national omnibus survey, as we always do, and in this past period, in trying to assess how interested parties view our organization, our omnibus survey shows that legal aid brand awareness has since now grown. In the last period, it was at 56%, and now we are at 59%, which is 3% growth. We will continue to do that, and this has been supported by the marketing strategy, which we have already rolled out and also indicated the activities that we are engaged in. Legal Aid would become even much better in realizing that in terms of our strategy, we have stakeholders which play a critical role. And in this case, government remains one of our stakeholders, together with Parliament as we are here today. Legal fraternity, because of the core responsibility which we have as a public law firm. And NGOs and CBOs, because those are the clients that which we serve and we engage with, and partners that which we will engage with in terms of delivering our services. And also because we engage with media, as already indicated in the last slide, we have also made sure as an organization that we have an impact on the international space. And for that very matter, we are quite involved in the African continent in terms of engaging on legal aid matters, and also we are party to international bodies in as far as making sure that as an organization we understand developments that are there, we feedback in terms of what we are doing best. We are continuing to engage with stakeholders in terms of making sure that we have value add, in terms of an understanding of our strategic direction as an organization, and at the same time strengthening what we could do best as seen from the other parties. We are hoping that our meaningful engagement with stakeholders will ensure that they continue to be an effective justice system, and that our vision for a success to justice for many South Africans is being realized. That brings the end to the part of my presentation. Thank you.
Chairperson, the next section on the annual financial statement and Auditor General's report will be presented by our CFO, Rebecca Shabata.
Thank you, Chair. In the past financial year 2012-2013, Legal Aid South Africa spent 98.7% of its budget. This was after taking into account the budget cut of 64 million. So we're very conservative in terms of spending just to ensure that we do not overspend. But overall, 98.7% of the budget was spent, and this has been the trend over the past few financial years where we've been spending at least 98% of our budget. And the financial statements that were presented and audited by the Office of the Auditor General were as follows, where we looked at the non-current assets for 2011-2012 being 140 million. This constitutes of our fixed assets, including motor vehicles, furniture and equipment, computer hardware, leasehold improvements, and software. where this reduced from 114 million to 110 million. The reduction is mainly because of the depreciation that happened during the financial year, but this is also taking into account the additions and disposals in that category of assets. The current assets consisting mainly of cash and bank debtors, and in this financial year inventories, which is mainly stationery, increased from 311 million to 373 million. The reason for the increase is due to the client trust funds, which increased substantially during the financial year under review, and also cash in the bank as a result of increase in the provision and individual commitments. So the cash that is available there is available to settle creditors as and when they fall due. Current non-current liabilities mainly consist of finance lease assets on the photocopiers and cell phones. There was just a small increase, while current liabilities increased substantially due to that related client trust funds, which we're showing both as assets being cash in the bank and also as liabilities, because these are not our funds. Okay, the increase there was also in the trade and creditors, where as at year end we had received goods and services. However, they were not paid for yet as at that time. You recall that for the financial year under review, the year end fell under the long Easter weekend, so some payments were not made, but were subsequently made. But we had to account for those goods and services received before year end. The revenue, which is mainly the government grant, increased substantially year on year at a marginal rate of 5%. Okay, we also received interest and other income, interest in mainly funds invested with the CPD, Corporation for Public Deposits, which is the Reserve Bank, and also other income, insignificant amounts arising from the disposal of assets. Overall, we had a surplus of 24 million compared to 29 million in the previous year. This surplus was due to the exclusion of capital expenditure, which is accounted for separately under the statement of financial position. However, the surplus is taken into account as depreciation, which is a non-cash flow item. Okay, this is just a cash flow indicating the flow of cash year on year. Overall, we had an increase in cash and cash equivalent of 46 million. Taking into account the 296 million that we started with at the beginning of the financial year, we then had a cash and cash equivalent at the end of the year of 342 million, which is, as indicated earlier, made up of cash at the bank and those funds invested with the CPD. The cash and cash equivalent is not a surplus or surplus that are just waiting there, but these are committed funds to settle both the short-term and the long-term liabilities, including those of judicial provisions which have already been accounted for under creditors. Okay, looking at the budget, what we started with at the beginning of the financial year, where we had an approved budget. The budget was subsequently revised or reviewed. The revisions were brought about as a result of additional funds received during the financial year and also rollover of funds approved during the financial year. In comparing now the final budget to the actuals, which are linked to the statement of financial performance, we then had a difference of 4.9 million in revenue. This was mainly as a result of the rollover funds that we received. Okay, we also had expenses. So we had a variance of 42 million. Again, these were mainly funds that were committed for GDK. These are disclosed as GDK commitments, but are not accounted for under the statement of financial performance. Capital, we had a small variance there of about 1.2%, and depreciation, which is a non-cash flow item. Moving on to the Auditor General's report. 2012-2013 financial year was the 12th year in succession where we had an unqualified audit report. This year was a clean audit report with no matters of emphasis, no other matters. So also the 8th year in succession with no matters of emphasis. There were no other matters raised by the AG, and also in terms of the management letter that was submitted or finalized by the AG, only housekeeping issues were raised by the AG. Thank you, Chair. And the next section that we'll talk to is our medium-term expenditure framework budget, as well as the additional funding request. And our National Operations Executive, Mr. Brian Nair, will talk to this section.
Thank you.
And good morning, Honourable Members. My presentation will be brief. I've just got a few slides, and it will deal with those five aspects that are presented on this slide at the moment. Moving to the first one, in terms of the National Treasury guidelines, these were the guidelines that we had to keep in mind when we drew up our MTEF, and effectively we had to keep our spending within the overall ceiling and limits established. We had to fund all our spending pressures and new priorities from within the spending baselines. We had to move from a shift spending from consumption to economic investment. We had to reprioritize baseline allocations so that we could also fund any higher priority areas that we needed to address. And we had to also look at specifically performance information, which focus was being placed on. This slide provides the overall view of the MTF in terms of the numbers. As you note, our budget for the current year is 1.378 billion, and in effect it increases by plus minus 5.5% for the next 3 years. So we needed to keep our programs in line with those increases. The next slide gives you a sense of the breakdown of where the monies are going. Being an organization that primarily renders the services internally with our own staff, salaries therefore counts for the bulk of it. It's under 75%. We have about 2.4% specific funding for case backlogs, and there are some developments around that in terms of trying to incorporate it as part of our baseline. Direct expenditure by and large would be duty care and cooperation partners, where we also provide direct services to clients. And the last two items is more operational and capital expenditure. Moving on to the next slide, these deals with programs, proposals that we presented to the MTEF committees in terms of what we need in terms of additional funding. This is at the eye level, there was about five programs that we motivated for, and the funding request required amounted to, for the first year, 181 million, and for the 3 year MTS period, it was just over half a billion rand. If we look at each of those programs, Chairperson, the first one deals with the increasing criminal capacity. It's primarily to increase our capacity at the district and regional courts, where there are some gaps at the moment. A continuing cry from many of our stakeholders is for the need for additional staff, because if any of our staff members are absent for any reason, then many of those courts come to a standstill. And we are motivating to increase our ratios at both district and regional court. That would also allow us some flexibility in terms of covering courts where practitioners are not available. And we made a funding proposal for about 252 staff. The next program deals with civil capacity. We were asking for 44 professional posts. I think the slides presented earlier on performance would have shown that this is our major growth area. There's still a massive need out there for civil services, and we need to continuously look at our capacity and our inability to meet that demand currently. Expansion of our national footprint, we have identified 6 satellite offices that we think have outgrown their current status as satellites. They need to be increased to justice centers so they can increase their range of services to clients. And we also identified some new offices that we needed to establish. Upgrading of our IT infrastructure. We are currently quite dependent on our IT systems, and we have identified the need to increase our broadband, and provision was made in our proposals for money for that. And the last one is something that's sometimes neglected, but as we increase our practitioner staff, we need to continuously ensure that there's sufficient support staff to back them up, or else our practitioners then get involved in legal in non-legal work, and that is support work, which is not what they're employed for. So we have identified 31 posts if we are to get those new criminal or practitioner posts. Moving on to the next slide, Chairperson, we're just highlighting specific funding challenges that we're currently having that the committee should be aware of, and how we could affect Legal Aid South Africa in particular. There is at the moment proposals to convert the backlog courts to permanent courts. We support that proposal. We think it's actually quite good. But the only challenge we're having is that it is not a simple matter of just converting those posts to permanent, because the funding, the way we actually budget for backlog court practitioners is different to permanent practitioners. And at the moment, if a simple conversion is done, our 85 backlog posts can only sustain 42 permanent staff members. So if a decision is made to actually convert everything, then we will be short by 29 million. The next item on that slide deals with additional magistrate court positions. There is a proposal currently being considered at different levels, and I think, I'm not sure if the minister has received it yet, to create 116 new magistrate posts as what is called phase one. And it's likely that the next phase will come with more posts. It's envisaged in this post that 42 of the backlog court posts will be part of it. So that leaves quite a few posts that would be totally new. We have done some cost estimates on the basis that if it were all regional costs, we'd need 60 million. I think that's the worst case scenario for us. I think many of those posts would be district costs. But the challenge is that we need to ensure that if new magistrate court positions are created that will lead to new courts, provision must be given to Legal Aid South Africa for practitioners to support them. And the last one is sexual offences courts. The minister announced 57 of the sexual offences courts. The intention from all our attendance at many forums was that these will be conversions of existing regional courts. But in the recent past, we have had requests to provide capacity at courts where these are new courts. And that poses a challenge for us because we don't have spare capacity. Thank you,
Chair. I think we can add to that last specific challenges, the issue of funding of commissions now, because I think that if we have to fund commissions, we also need additional funds. We believe that the easiest way to attend to that is that whoever establishes commissions should actually also provide for that funding for people who are indigent to participate in the commissions, and that would be the clearest way of doing it. Moving on, we were also required to report on the budgetary review and recommendations report of the committee of the past year. And this was what the committee had recommended in relation to legal aid in terms of additional funding, that you had supported our request for all of this. And to report in the next slide that we on what we received. We did receive 20 million in terms of additional funding in that financial year. And of that money, we used 5.7 million to create civil posts and 14 million to create to increase our recruitment levels from 96% to 98%, which means that we would then have more warm bodies assisting clients. So this 20 million is also offset against the 60 million that I said we had a budget cut. But as you will see, it's not that we didn't offset it and we're not allowed to. We had to. We still absorb that the cut by cutting back on things like operational costs. In the next point is that money allocated to the Child Justice Act and to the Children's Act. In terms of the Child Justice Act, we received $1.8 million, which we used to create one civil SPA, two civil PAs, and two civil CA practitioner posts, and then we used the balance to assist with a mediation pilot project linking to an alternate dispute resolution mechanism for the same thing. Then in the $8.3 million that was allocated in terms of the Children's Act, we used that to again increase practitioner posts, both at district and regional, as well as at the High Court unit level. And then we used the balance to assist in the operational costs of making that happen. The last section then is the wrap-up of our presentation. Excuse me. And our Deputy Chairperson, Judge McKay, will take us through that and summarize our performance, but also then make some concluding remarks. Thank you, Chair.
Giving you a report on the work that we've performed so far, and the report reflects very clearly the successes and the challenges that faces us, both at operational level and at budget level. Now the next slide, and we'll go to that. It shows the on the budgetary front. As it shows, certainly you will see from the budgetary front that in 2011-2012 we had a budget of 1.2 billion, and this year we had 1.4. Expenditure level remains fairly the same, 99.8%, and again this year 98.7%. The Auditor General report, we've already heard that we have so far been successful. Both last year was our 7th year, this year is our 8th year of unqualified audit report with no matters of emphasis. As far as people development are concerned, we've got 2,677 for the year 2011-2012, this year 2,694. And as far as staff are concerned, 79% both for 2011 and 2012-2013. And recruitment levels also remain fairly same, 95.6, both in the financial year 2011-2012 and 2012-2013. We remained also for the last 4 years, including this year, in the field, we're hoping to be the best employer. In other ways, not only are we seeking to ensure at operational level that we deliver the services that we require to do, but we work very hard to make sure that our labor relations and employee relations are kept at the best and highest level. And I think that contributes to the success that we have made, and I think it needs to pause and want to really appreciate the kind of good work that our staff delivers for us as the board. The challenges that faces us have already been spoken to. In as far as the budget is concerned, the CEO indicated the budget cut of 34 million by National Treasury, as well as the 30 million shortfall on the OSC funding. The constraint that resulted in adequate coverage of the court, the high practitioner case loads, the staff recruitment of 95.6 at the end of the financial year 2012-2013, lack of relief capacity contributing to delays in the court. The point was made just now that whenever, for whatever reason, one of our practitioners are not available, we have no alternative or substitute to address that particular problem. These matters, we have addressed them in the MTF application for the new funding. However, the information we have indicates that there will be no new funds available from the National Treasury for the programs. we're waiting and hoping to hear from the minister's speech. I guess it's next week, and hopefully we hear whether, as far as these programs are concerned, there'll be some funds available to address these programs. Some matters have exceeded their turnaround times in both the regional court and the high court. In as far as the number of awaiting trial sessions are concerned, a period of over 2 years in custody still remains very high. The support platform has not been able to be increased in the past 2 years in line with the increase in legal capacity, putting a strain on the support platform. All systems remains unsustainable in the year under review, and we've been experiencing intermittent instability due to the errors in the application of the code, even after all elements relating to the K2 workflow and SharePoint upgrades were addressed by the service provider and the IT staff. Concerning comments, I've already indicated that we've been very successful in this particular financial year. We've achieved 90% of the performance target. The legal aid services delivery increased marginally by 2% in terms of legal matters and increased by 17% in advised matters. This was due to no increased budget for staffing and budget cuts experienced in the financial year. Its financial management remains sound and clean, as already indicated, achieving again a successful clean audit, and overall, Chair, the legal aid South Africa remains sustainable and in a position to continue delivering on its mandate into the next year. Thank you very much.
Chair, thank you very much. I think that concludes the presentation by the team, but I brought Mr. Maria for a deliberate reason. We never speak about the performance of the board itself. I chair the board. I see vibrancy, cooperation, good commitment from board members. I think I need to report that. Mr. Maria is chairperson of the Remuneration Committee of the board, and he's just going to talk briefly about the effectiveness of the board of legal aid South Africa.
Chairperson, thank you very much. For good reason, management who was responsible for the performance report did not report on the effectiveness of the board, and to that extent, I thought it might be appropriate to make a short presentation or inform the committee about the effectiveness. On a lighter note, I think management, in fact, acted correctly by not express a view on board, as was done by the CEO of the Attorney's Fidelity Fund before this before this committee some time ago. Be that as it may, don't know what to say about it. I will leave it for that. in respect of succession, the board does have a very effective succession plan. For instance, if new appointments are made, we have the cooperation of the minister who is responsible for the appointments. For the board to give input, we identify skills that we require. We have interviews. We headhunt people to serve on the board. We have interviews for people when people identified, and to that extent ensure that we do get the best material on the board. And to that extent, it contributes largely to ensure that we have the necessary skills of the board. In terms of King 3, regular assessments of the board are done, effectiveness of the board. The following from the whole process, the board undergoes training. Our CEO, who's responsible for the mission, etc., plays an active role in the training that the board undergo. We do it at Institute of Directors and also identify other people to do that. Perhaps a new development, which is not in the 2012-2030 year, we have started actively, although it was done in the past. We have devoted, in terms of the King III proposals, to devote to a specific committee the responsibility of social and ethics requirements, which is in the Companies Act, also in King III. Although social and ethics is not an obligation for the institution, our view was that we must comply with the King III requirements in that regard. In respect of the leadership in the board, I think with great humbleness, our chairperson will not speak about that aspect, but I must really say that we have excellent leadership in the board. We have a board, in my view, which is quite effective. Chair, from a personal perspective, I am involved in quite a number of boards for at least two decades, over 20 years that I'm serving on quite a number of boards, and I have stated at board level when an assessment was done that in my experience the performance of this board is exceptional. I have not experienced it in any of the other boards where I have been involved. To that extent, I think it's a pleasure to report that the board also are functioning.
All right. Okay. Just one idea to do with the forest one. Mr. Swart.
Chair, once again, we have good news today, which is always wonderful when the Legal Aid South Africa comes before us. And again, I just want to commend them from our side. The audit report and the reaching of targets, 90% target, is highly commendable, and we trust, and as I've said in Parliament before, that it should be emulated by other units, by other departments. But it is a good news story, and I just want to congratulate Legal Aid South Africa and the board for the excellent work that they've done, yet again in having an unqualified audit report, 12 years in succession, 8 years in succession with no matters of emphasis. And Chair, those of us that have been on the Justice Committee for many years will remember the days when Legal Aid, the files in the rooms, 15 years ago was it, or something like that. So it's really great that we've come such a long way. I just have one or two aspects that I wasn't too clear about, and that the one issue related to the Marikana Commission, and that was the 17 million additional funding, that I presume is on the present interpretation of your mandate and not in terms of the new judgment. Maybe you could just clear that. Obviously, again, holding our horses, depending on what decision you take and respecting that, there might be even greater financial constraints should the present judgment have to be applied. Would you just clarify that for us? Clearly, Chair, we again are faced with a situation of budget constraints and an approach to us, and we need to, as far as possible, support those recommendations in view of the excellent work that Legal Aid South Africa is doing. But one is also aware of the budgetary constraints, and next week we'll hear about the mini-budget. I'd also like to just ask about the issue when we heard from the National Prosecuting Authority the large number of alternative dispute resolutions, the ADRs, 143,000. And I'm just interested from Legal Aid South Africa to what degree you are, one presumes many of those cases will be, would have gone through Legal Aid as well, and do you keep stats as to how many of those go via that route, whether it's diversion in terms of the Child Justice Act, mediation? You did give mention of that, but just maybe you can comment in general about alternative dispute resolutions from that we were alerted to by the NPA. Chair, that's all from my side. Thank you very much. Mrs. Schaefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, congratulations are once again in order, and I have to say that if any departments in our cluster deserve extra funding, I think legal aid is one of them. They have proven time and time again that they know how to manage their funding that they get, and it's quite clear that they are needing more money to provide services to the insurance in the country. I just want to know, my pet project that you always don't report on, maintenance matters, is that included in the family law heading? And if so, do you have any figures for us as to how many maintenance matters you deal with per year? And I'm just interested to know your SCA appeal success ratio. So what do you attribute that? Do you do really good screening and only take the maximum appeal that you really believe to be worth it? And then I would like your comments on why NHO has the highest turnover rate percentage. 7.9 is the highest out of all of them. And then just on a general point, Mr. Chair, I really think that we need to look at now, at, I'm sure, I think we have discussed this before, but funding for commissions in general as a separate item. Because it's not only legal aid that's impacted by that. The department themselves has complained about it many times, that they get lumped with these commissions and haven't got the funding in their budget for it. They get their budget cut and then they are not able to render services that they need. And I think it's time that we need to look at that holistically, a separate budget for commissions. If the president wants to establish commissions, then he must have a budget for it, and it must be taken into account with all the implications, such as legal aid. Thanks.
I just want to add my voice in congratulating Legal Aid South Africa. I was just counting the years of the Auditor General, because I take a lot of interest, as I said, in that committee, that throughout the life of the Auditor General, you were one institution that did not give him headaches. And I just want to congratulate you for that. And I was just thinking to myself whether this good board is not able to assist other boards, because you know there are a lot of boards that have got problems in South Africa, and I think they could learn something from yourself. I think there is something that you are doing that is very special. I was impressed in putting King 3 in the Companies Act, which many other boards maybe have got difficulties coping with. I was observing under National Footprint that Limpopo has only got 7 satellite offices. I would really appreciate it if the budget allows you to increase your presence in that province, because there is really a lot of backwardness, a lot of a lack of employment, and a lot of ignorance of the your presence. Thank you.
Chair, just to take the opportunity of joining my colleagues in congratulating Legal Aid South Africa for clean audits. And to actually want to know, in terms of your target for women, you actually indicated from 5%, even if you did manage to go to 50.6%. But what informs the 45% would be my interest in the background of understanding that there has to be equal opportunities to men and women. And also I'd like to know, in terms of the statistics that I've been given, how much of the percentages represent legal representation just for cases that are for women, just to have an idea of how many women I should be assisted by you. Do you ever decline requests? If yes, do you have an idea of actually giving the statistics or maybe the percentage of cases that have declined and just the general type of cases that do decline. On average, you have 82% conviction. I just want to have an understanding of that in terms of performance. Is it a good sign? Is it a bad sign? If we have 82% conviction. And would this actually talk to the quality of legal service that we have? Please do give an idea on that. You have a large number of high court matters that are pending. What is the cost of the 52% of pending high court matters? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair Tefen. I also want to commend the Legal Aid Board. I don't want to sound as if I'm blowing my trumpet, Chair Tefen. When I arrived at Parliament, I was tasked with my area of focus being the Legal Aid Board. And when I look back, I saw it growing. So I don't know whether I should also take credit. I should take credit. At that stage, Chesterton, the Legal Aid Board was doing basically criminal law matters. And then I remember Judge President Samson Mlambo used to come frequently to Parliament to plead for being allowed to do also civil cases and the like. And I think as a state we must, as a committee, apologize that because our attitude was, we used to send him back to say, no, the Act speaks about criminal matters, not civil matters and the like. But I'm asking that, Chairperson, in view of the fact that now that the Legal Aid Board, Legal Aid South Africa, you see I'm using the board because I knew it as a board. Legal Aid South Africa, to what extent is it now doing criminal matters? Specifically, my interest is to what level are the practitioners, those who are doing matters at the Justice Center, being exposed to civil matters? The Judge President will recall that at the JSC we are looking at people, practitioners, whether they are getting enough exposure to the various angles, not only finding prosecutors being exposed to criminal matters, but also as well as to other areas, specifically to civil matters and the like. And then, that is all, Chairperson, that I want to do. It's amazing to when you're looking at the document of the Legal Aid of Africa to see where it is today. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for those words of encouragement and congratulations. I will deal with some broad issues that have been raised, then the team will respond to some specific ones. The figures we presented of 17 million around Marikana, that is interpreting the judgment as a case. So it includes the implications of what the judgment means, the 17 million. Just answering the question further, or the comment that there should be funding for commissions of general, in general, I have had discussions with the minister. I've had two meetings with him, and he agrees that that should be the case, because you will recall that there's a commission that's nearly about to happen, I don't know, here in the Western Cape. There's one that's happening in KZN. We are involved. We try to resist, but we are there. So we think the floodgates have opened, and we welcome the support of the committee that there should be specific provision made when commissions of inquiry are established for funding of people who may want to be appearing there. So we agree with that approach. And just wanted to deal with the SCA appeals. We do not refuse to get involved in any appeals that go there. In fact, that also answers the question whether we do refuse legal aid applications to deserving clients. We don't. When people qualify, we get involved, we do those matters. We only refuse in matters where people fail the means test, largely, I think. But there is still the provision that courts can still, having gone through an investigation, order us to provide legal representation where we said no. There's a very elaborate appeal process that people go into, and that brings in a lot more people to be aided legally by us. So I don't think, as I sit here, that we willy-nilly refuse legal aid to deserving people who want it. The other point I wanted to respond to was about the Limpopo situation. As JP of the Gauteng province, I'm in charge of Limpopo too. I can tell the committee that the High Court project for Limpopo is in full steam. There were problems contractually, but the new contractor has taken slightly started working. In the next 10 months, that High Court will be complete. There will be more work from a legal point of view there. But as JP, I've also taken a tour of the whole province just to check the city of the second court and the location of the magistrate's court. And I have engaged the regional operations activities in the region about how she places her people. A situation that resonates with the apartheid era, where you have the High Court in Tohoyandou. People who are close to that High Court can't come to that High Court because of what you know. But in terms of the discussions I've engaged, that High Court will start servicing other areas that go further north, you know, that were not covered by that High Court. So there will be more exposure from Legal Aid South Africa, and I think we will take to heart the need to establish more service delivery points to make sure that we respond to the need that we see on the ground. I think those are the issues I wanted to respond to, but my team will respond to further questions raised. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I would attend to a few of the questions. I think the first one was based dealing with the MPA's, I think they call it mediation. It is correct to state that a large percentage of whatever they reported would be matters that Legal Aid in South Africa would have been seized with. And if you remember the recall slide presented by the CEO on outcomes, you would recall there that there was 73% of matters that we took on that didn't go through a trial process. It was either withdrawn from the court, or there was a warrant of arrest, it was struck off the roll. Now, when we are handling a matter that eventually is removed from the system, we still regard it as a withdrawal. From the last financial year, we have actually specified the type of withdrawal as an informal mediation withdrawal. So we do have stats on it. So we have not included in the presentation, but we can provide it should it be required. But I can confirm that quite a large percentage of the withdrawal would be matters of informal mediation that the NPA also reported on. Regarding the SCA appeals, I think it's the what do we attribute to the high percentage? I think there's traditionally a perception that legal aid only has junior, fairly inexperienced practitioners, and I think the results in the SCA show that this is not necessarily so. We have very senior, competent practitioners in our higher courts, especially the high courts in particular. We also have a category of practitioners, although the numbers are small. It's called senior litigators. And I think our success in the court speaks to the fact that we do have practitioners of varying experience and abilities to handle matters in all courts, essentially. And I think it also can be attributed to the emphasis given throughout all our offices on the need for quality legal services. So we're quite happy with the results. But it also speaks to the fact that in the criminal courts in the country, legal interests are primarily is the dominant player in terms of representation. And as our practitioners continue to serve clients in those courts, their experience and capacity is also improving, to the extent that many of them can compete, if not, and compare very favorably to practitioners in private sector with regards to criminal law. With regards to the Limpopo, I think Judge addressed that. Percentage of women represented by Legal Aid South Africa, we do have those stats, and we can appreciate. I can say at a higher level that in the criminal courts, we represent more males, whereas in the civil work, we represent a lot more females. But should the members require that information, we can provide it. Do we decline requests for legal aid? Yes, we do. The reasons would primarily be speak to clients not passing our means test, where we believe that they can afford to conduct their own services. There could also be matters where we decline where legal aid is not provided for in our guide. Again, we do have all this information in terms of the numbers of people that are declined each year. We can say that we try as much as possible, especially in civil cases, not to decline, even where our capacity at the Justice Center is low. We look at alternative ways of assisting clients, even if it means sending them for or allocating a judicial practitioner to them. In terms of analyzing conviction rate of 82%, and the contra of it is that is an acquittal rate of 18%, I think that speaks to the fact of only matters that go to court. And we do have a big impact in matters that do not go for trial, and that is the withdrawal rate. And a lot of work is done by our practitioners there, which leads to those matters not being proceeded with by the NPA and the courts. We can say in terms of the quality of work, a lot of emphasis is placed in ensuring that our practitioners are competent and able. We must acknowledge that the matters that are brought before us and whatever is presented, our job in terms of legal aid is not necessarily to ensure that the client is acquitted, but rather to ensure that our clients are given a fair trial and they have the opportunity of presenting their case in the court. And we think our practitioners do quite a good job at that. But certainly the high conviction or the conviction rate in terms of our stats for matters that go to trial of 82 is not reflective of poor quality work. And I think our judge president or chairperson will be able to tell you about the feedback that he receives from the magistrates in particular in terms of the quality of work done by our practitioners. With regard to the high pending matters for high courts, in those slides you note that our turnaround time for high courts is 12 months, and anything over 12 months then it becomes known as a backlog case. Many of the high courts cannot finish their work in those 12 months, and therefore the percentage of those cases is shown as over 50%. What I can assure the committee is that we are continuously looking at all matters that exceed the target turnaround time to determine whether we are contributing to that delay, and also to identifying interventions that can be put in place, especially in terms of liaison with stakeholders to see whether some of those matters can be speeded up. And where possible, we try to process it then to backlog courts so that those matters receive attention. With regard to the question dealing with how are we exposing our practitioners to civil work, many of them noting that they are in criminal work, just to indicate that noting that we are now having two streams very much because the volume of civil work has reached a stage where it's over 10%, was reported at 13%. We do have now in each Justice Center a separate section. We have obviously the criminal sections are large, but we also have civil sections with dedicated civil practitioners. So with regard to practitioners, there's now specialization. We'll employ a practitioner for either the criminal court work or a civil court work. Where the cross comes in is we also have over 600 camera attorneys. And what we do is make sure that as part of their training, especially those that are allocated to criminal courts, we ensure that whatever the requirements are in terms of the law society, the admission requirements, exposure in those types of work is provided by managers. And that gives us assurance that they meet those requirements. But I'm also pleased to say that we also have a small number of camp attorneys that also are rotated through those civil units and civil sections that we have, so that they also get exposure in civil work. Thanks, Jeff.
Sorry, Brian, do you want to just make a comment on the maintenance method?
Sorry, my apologies. I've got some good news, and I'm going to. The board has made a policy decision in terms of extending our service and maintenance. I think we did a last comment in the last presentation that there are literally hundreds of thousands of people who require assistance. And we have to be mindful of the fact that we can't help all of them with the present capacity. The decision made by board is that if there's any person there whose matter remains unresolved after a period of 1 year, then we would then be able to actually assist those flats in maintenance matters. And we have now communicated that information. So our offices are gearing up. In fact, they are providing assistance to women in maintenance matters in particular.
And at all times, will they need to be required to fulfill the requirements of...
Yes. They will always need to fulfill the means test requirements in terms of indigence.
When has that been happening?
I think the board may have took the decision in fact, I think we can speak about it a bit later today when we deal with the amendments to the guide. But we are starting to provide that services to it's already implemented. I think from the time the board made the decision, I don't know offhand exactly which meeting it was.
But for children, the maintenance issue is automatic. We don't wait that year.
Chairperson, just to respond to one matter. In as far as the staff turnover rate is concerned, I think we can best respond to the extent where staff turnover rate talks to our own organization. And maybe I just want to summarize our strategic intention as far as building the organization, and with much focus on employee and organization development. One key issue that I need to indicate is that we have stated our promise in the form of an employer value proposition, and that requires of us to live up to that promise. And our observation is that while we would have expressed our values, among other issues which are critical, is passion for justice. Supportive to that, service excellence is one of our key focus. People-centered development is an interest of every employee, and that is our focus. Accountability as part of us being here is part of it. We also view that in terms of us seeing staff and those who are interested to join the organization, stay in the organization, the leadership should be a good role model. And for that very matter, our attempt as the leadership, together with board, is to make sure that we always foster to aspire to practice those values. Our policies, in terms of what board would like to see them, while they live up to the required legislative requirements, are attempting also to be flexible and accommodate diversity in terms of the interest that will be there for staff. And our terms and conditions of service, as we have said, we are among the top employer accreditation for the fifth year this year. We think that they are competitive, and we strive to live to the best practice. And lastly, let me say that the OSC determination came handy, and it was just a cherry at the top to make sure that we retain the employees and other interested employees that enjoy the organization. Thank you.
I'll respond to that. Okay, so I think in addition, what Jerry was responding to is what do we do to ensure a lower turnover. I think your question was why is national office higher than the others in terms of turnover? And that is primarily because of some of the professional staff we have, like IT staff, audit staff, where you see greater movement, and that was one of the main reasons that we have it. I think one of the other issues that was outstanding was the issue of why do we have as a target in our employment equity stats 45% for women instead of 50-50. We link our targets to the figures that we get from either the Department of Labor or staff, let's say, in terms of the economically active population, and that is why that figure would be linked to that. So as that changes, we would change. 45-50. That's worrying. I don't think that's proper justification. If you're saying you're linking it to economically active population, so which would mean that if women, you still disadvantage women anyway, if you're going to utilize that. But I'm just hoping that you look into it so that you realign it accordingly. I think we do, and you can see that we're not doing too badly on the number of women we have. I think that's the way employment equity targets are set in terms of linking to economically active population, because that's the pool you have to draw from. And so if that's the pool you have to draw from, then it means that if you are then setting that, let's say, 50-50 or even higher, it means you're going to now have a smaller pool and you have to then go beyond that. But that doesn't mean we'll stop there. We will try and link to the natural demographic. I think that's what you say, the natural demographic proportions, and we will also strive towards that. Okay.
Chairperson, I just wanted to deal with the high pending High Court caseload. I lead one of the High Courts, and I can safely say here, without fear of contradiction, that the finalization rate of criminal trials of high courts is less than that of the state courts. It's an issue I have tackled head on. You know, someone joked that in the high court, the attitude is more as no kadach. And I've said, well, for that as no kadach. So, legally, South Africa will tell you that in all the criminal courts that are active in the high courts, Johannesburg, Pretoria, and the circuits, at the end of each term, a report is generated to me about what happened to the role that the judge had. And it has had a very good effect in the sense that both NPA and legal aid, they know that when the circuit starts, if there are 14 trials on that circuit, they will have to account to me why they finalized them and left them the 14. So it's working. And I've seen it too when I've appointed regional court magistrates to act as judges. You see a different finalization rate. So this is work in progress. We are caught up as Legal Aid South Africa. Our lawyers can't dictate the pace to the bench. It's the bench that determines the pace of how much work goes on. I think I just have to say that. Thank you, Chair.
There was a question about the average 82% conviction rate. And I asked the question around performance. And I take into consideration that, by the way, we're actually dealing with people alleged to have offended. Which would naturally say to somebody, anyway, these people have actually committed offences and they have to be convicted, but we're representing them in order for us to actually
provide them with a just process. You know, the other day when the special investigation unit was here, and they were actually putting their targets on the amount of money that they get on assets that have been forfeited. We almost like pose the same question. You know, sometimes when you deal with performance indicators, you actually also want to put meaning into them. So for now, the conviction rate is high. That actually says to us, yes, it's okay, or this is actually something that we need to look at. Is it about the quality of legal service? Or naturally, is it okay because of the fact that they have offended and therefore the court has actually found them to be guilty? The same question that we pose to the Special Investigation Unit, when the target is about really the amount of money you get on the assets that have been forfeited, when you're actually working for the claim society, what then if you come to a situation where you don't have any assets to forfeit?
Chair, can I respond to that? I think Mr. Nair responded to that question. In the past, we've always had this information, but we did not share it because we want to avoid being seen as providing below quality services when you look at the conviction rate. You see, the NPA also comes here and they'll tell you that their target is a 90% conviction rate. Right? And if their target goes below that, they'll be quizzed. Are you failing to convict guilty people? The question to us is, are you failing to get innocent people acquitted? I think it's a catch-22 situation. Our role, and I think Brian and I tried to explain that, our lawyers fight to get conviction, yes. Acquittals, I'm sorry. They fight to get acquittals. But look at it this way. The NPA goes through a screening process. They'll arrest 2,000 people. They only trial 500. And of the 500, not all of them will be convicted. So our objective as Legal Aid South Africa is to provide a defense that enables a person to get a fair hearing. I think that's the yardstick that the committee needs to look at. It's too simplistic to say, why do you have too many convictions? Does it mean you're not providing? But the answer that Brian gave, and that's the answer that I always give, judicial officers would say to me, please don't send me judicare. Send me your own lawyers, because I know they come prepared and they engage with the matter when they come to court. I'm satisfied as a judicial officer that whoever I have convicted has had a fair hearing before me, because they've been ably represented. So the high conviction rate, or the 82% conviction rate that we get, is not an indicator that we provide below quality services. It's actually a better indicator compared to the 90% that the NPA has to obtain, because it means we're bringing the steps down. We are effective. Thank you, Chair.
Can we take 5 minutes break, please?
Yes. 10 minutes break.